You're listening to Adventures in Jewish History with Rabbi Danny Sackstein.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soul to Soul. So it's wonderful to be with you live from our studios here this Wednesday afternoon. It's 13 minutes past 1, 13:13. And we reflect on a wonderful weekend, a wonderful Shabbos that took place around the world. It was the Chief Rabbi Shabbos Project, which was very enthusiastically taken up by the Jewish people, with over 100 countries participating, over 1,500 cities. It's quite remarkable and incredible how widespread and what an influence the Shabbos Project had. And we in our community, in the Sunny Road Kahila, we had a wonderful dinner on Friday night, and we had an outstanding speaker, Professor Ephraim Kramer, spoke about his experiences as the Chief Medical Officer of FIFA, which is a very prestigious position, a very important position, and it's quite incredible that a Shomer Shabbos Yid, a Frum Jew, he was appointed in that role, in that position. And he told us about his fascinating Shabbos experiences, and many of them were really interesting and very fascinating to hear about how when a Jew stands by his principles or by her principles and keeps Shabbos and won't budge and won't compromise those principles, how that really creates a admiration of those around them. And even non-Jews can appreciate and understand and respect a person who stands loyal to their values and strong by their principles. And he told us many stories that reflected that incredible reality of how others do respect a Jew who remains loyal and steadfast and follows our customs and our practices and our Jewish laws as we should on the Holy Shabbos. And then after being on such a high and there being a real euphoria around the Jewish people from the Magnificent Shabbos Project, in which there are hundreds of thousands of Jews around the world participated in special events honoring the Shabbos, we heard the tragic news of Motzei Shabbos and we came crashing down after hearing the terrible events in Pittsburgh and how 11 Jews, just for being Jews, were murdered, were killed by a meshugana, by a crazy person who was so filled with hatred and anti-Semitic anger. And it's just so tragic that really is the reality of the Jewish people. And that is an illustration of what we spoke about last week and which I'm going to extend upon this week, of being the covenantal people. And that's part of the price we pay for being the people who live by the covenant. We're discussing our shows about adventures in Jewish history, and we're looking at Avraham Avinu, our great forefather Abraham, from a historical perspective, understanding the life and times of Abraham and the experiences that he and his wife Sarah went through and how the choices they made and the lives they lived really forged the way and created a new path for the Jewish people, for their descendants, that would follow a pathway that connected us to God and connected us to the covenant. And the covenant took place when Abraham was 70 years old, and Abraham we know, as we discussed last week, Abraham, he was such a brilliant person, he was such a smart person, that he could work out that the world must have a benevolent, kind creator. He saw the world, and he realized that there must be a kind creator behind everything. And he searched his whole life for that creator. At the age of 52, God revealed himself to Abraham. And at the age of 70, God gave Abraham a choice. Did he want to enter into the covenant, a eternal covenant that will be binding for Abraham and his descendants that will follow? A covenant that would have great implications and ramifications. A covenant that would bring monotheism to the world, teach the world about morality, about a higher self, about a higher mission for human beings. A covenant that would demand of Abraham and his descendants to live up to the expectations and the requirements and the responsibilities of the covenant. And if they would not live up to them and would go against that covenant and breach those terms of the covenant, so there would be very serious repercussions and conditions. and consequences. Unfortunately, throughout our turbulent history, we have seen what that means. We have seen those consequences and those repercussions of not following the covenant, of not living up to our responsibilities in the covenant. So when one understands that covenantal theory, so one can begin to make sense of the very mysterious and turbulent history of the Jewish people over the centuries. Through the lenses of the covenant, one can see clearly the journey of the Jewish people and the history of the Jewish people. And one also has an understanding of the present day situation of Klal Yisrael, of who we are, of what we stand for. And of course, it gives us clarity as to where we're going and where our, in what direction our future lies and how we should participate in creating that future. So the covenant is essential to understanding the Jewish people and to embracing the destiny of the Jewish people. If we don't buy into the covenantal theory, we don't understand the covenantal theory. So no regular, normal ideas and principles and patterns can describe the nature of the history of the Jewish people and can describe the current situation of the Jewish people. So it's through that covenantal theory that we have insight and understanding and knowledge and clarity of who we are as a nation, as Klal Yisrael, as the people of Israel. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Adventures in Jewish History with Rabbi Danny Sackstein.
As we've been discussing Abraham and understanding Abraham from a historical perspective, Abraham's life was focused on raising the level of morality and consciousness of the world and awakening humanity from the slumber of paganism. And Abraham knew how he would affect others, how he would make an impact on the world around him. We discussed last week that Abraham said, it says that our sages teach us he set up an eshel. Oh, the Torah says an eshel. The sages explain what does an eshel mean. It's an acronym for achila shtia lina, for eating, for drinking, for sleeping over. Abraham set up free hotels with free meals and delicious food, and he was able to attract people that way and generate the momentum. And as a result of people flocking to him and Sarah, he would then teach them about the values, the principles, the ideas of morality, of consciousness, of monotheism. The Meiri, the great Meiri, one of the great Rishonim, his name is the Meiri. He lived 1,000 years ago. In fact, we didn't have his writings for some time until we had access to the archives in the Vatican. The writings of the Meiri were lost, and we were then able to retrieve them. They had a copy there, and they were been printed, and now the Meiri is once more available to the Jewish world, which is the Meiri is a real classic on a perush on the Torah Shebikshav, on the Gemara. It's called the Beis HaBechira. And in the Meiri's introduction to Pirkei Avos, he traces the history of the world all the way from Adam to his day. And he traces his genealogy. And he says over there that according to his tradition, according to what he's received from his teachers, his Mesorah said that Avraham was successful in reaching 50% of the world's population at the time, which is quite a dramatic statement, and it's quite an incredible thing that Abraham was able to reach out and educate humanity about God, and about 50% of the world's population at the time, Abraham was able to reach, was able to touch in some way. One can understand it because the world's population wasn't so big at the time. Remember, Abraham's in 1948 since creation. He's 400 years after the flood, and so the world was localized and centralized to the Middle East, to those areas. And Abraham was a very well-known person. He was a very wealthy person. He was somebody whose teaching spread far and wide and were able to reach 50% of the world at the time, which really is an unbelievable achievement. And he introduced to the world this concept of a higher power, of morality and responsibility. On that bedrock, all advances in human civilization have been built. We see that Abraham is confronted with many different challenges. One of them being there was a brutal war that took place at the times of Abraham. The world's constantly engaged in war, and it was no different back then. It was a war that lasted 26 years. It was a war between the four kings and the five kings. And, you know, we've seen in the history of the world many long wars. The European wars were very long. You had a 100-year war between France and England. the 30-year war between the at the time of the Protestant Reformation. So those were long wars. Today the wars are shorter because we're more efficient. But nonetheless, Abraham lived through that long war, and he chose to remain neutral. And in generally, the Jewish feeling is to remain neutral when it comes to war, especially when it's not our war, and we don't really mind which way it goes. But, you know, if we choose a side, we'll be a loser either way. So I suppose apart from World War II, in World War II, we were the target of the war. And Abraham remained neutral until he was told by Og Melech HaBashan, Og, the giant, that Lot had been captured. And Abraham then reluctantly gets involved in the war to save his nephew Lot, and he miraculously ends that war. And the at the time, Abraham became a great hero. If there was a Nobel Prize at the time, Abraham would have won the Nobel Peace Prize for bringing peace to the region. And that was also part of the renown and the fame that of Abraham that spread far and wide. We see that Lot opts out. So we're discussing what the covenantal theory is, what the covenantal responsibility is. And Abraham and Sarah understood that very well, and they bought into it, and that then became the future of their descendants. However, Lot also understands, and he sees how hard Abraham and Sarah are working, how dedicated they are, and how committed they are to the cause, and how what a difficult time they have, how little appreciation there is, how people, you know, are difficult and complain and do not appreciate all that they're doing. And so Lot says, what do I need all this for? What do I need all this headache and heartache? Leave me alone. Let me do my thing. Let me sit on my balcony and drink my whiskey and have an easy life. I don't want this. This is not for me. So Lot opts out. And Abram and Sarah are obviously shattered because there's no succession. And you know, who will continue the covenantal pathway? And the only way it will happen, they now realize, is through their own descendants. And the problem is that Sarah is not capable of having children. She's infertile. So that's always, our rabbis teach us, is the state of the Jewish people. That the part of the idea of the covenant is when you look at it on paper, so it seems like there can't be a future. It just doesn't add up. It seems to be impossible. And that's where the Jewish people begin. We begin at when the realm of impossible starts. And it looks like there's no future for the Jewish people. With Abraham and Sarah, so they don't have children. You can't have children. It looks like there's not going to be a future. And, you know, the world counts on that. The world says that, you know, surely this covenant can't still be happening. And the world is patient and waiting for the covenant to dissolve, to end. Even though we've been around for almost 4,000 years, the world doesn't lose its patience, and they're still waiting for it to happen. And it's the same attitude that we see amongst Jews towards their observant Jewish brothers and sisters, that they say, you know, let's wait a little while. Soon, all of these backwards, archaic people are going to disappear. There was a famous meeting between David Ben-Gurion and the Chazon Ish, and the Ben-Gurion mentioned to his advisors after the meeting, he said, you know, we need to be patient with them now because they ain't going to be here for very long. They surely are going to disappear. How could it be that in the 20th century, in the 21st century, you still have Jews that are eating kosher, you still have Jews that are learning Torah, you still have Jews that are observing Shabbos, as so many did this past Shabbos and the Shabbos Project? How could it be in the 21st century? But here we are. And that is part of the covenant. The covenant is that it seems like it's not possible. It seems like there's no future. It seems like it can't, it just doesn't add up. But that's who we are. That's what the covenant means. And, you know, you can answer that question, how could it be 21st century that there are those that are still observing the mitzvahs of the Torah? How could it be in the 20th century that 6 million Jews are killed? How could it be in the 21st century that 11 Jews are mowed down in their place of worship? So, you know, that question goes both ways, really. But that is the future of the Jewish people, is really where there's no future. And they, and if you look at it now, look at the state of Israel. The state of Israel is really a microcosm of the story of the Jewish people. And after 1900 years, we come back home, come back to our land, our homeland. We seem to have indefensible borders. We have a very difficult economy, surrounded by enemies, opposed by most of the world. It looks like there's certainly not going to be a future. It looked like in the 48 war that it was impossible for the Jews to defeat five well-trained, well-armed Arab armies, a bunch of refugees. But look what happened, a miraculous victory in 1948. 1967, it looked like the Jews are going to be wiped out. There's going to be another Holocaust just two decades later. That how will they stand up to Nasser and his Arab allies, again, very well-trained and well-armed by the Russians, way outnumber the Jews in terms of military equipment, in terms of numbers of soldiers. But again, a miraculous victory. So it seems that the Jewish people are about where there's no future. But it turns out that there actually is a future, and there is certainly a great future for the Jewish people. There's certainly a great future for the state of Israel, our homeland, and there's a great future for all those that connect themselves to and enter into and embrace the covenant, which is really the defining nature of the Jewish people. So the Torah tells us itself, with there's a pasuk that says, Who could say that to Abraham that his wife would give birth and have a child, who would nurse a baby? Who could say such a thing? How could that be? But that's what happened. And that's the wonder of the Jewish people, that we're still here, that we still have a state, that we still have Torah, more Torah being learned than ever in the history of the Jewish people. How could it be? That's the covenantal nature of Jewish history, and the covenantal nature of Klal Yisrael, of the Jewish people. We see that finally Yitzchak is born, and the miraculous child, the miracle baby, appears in the form of Yitzchak. And even after the birth of Yitzchak, where it seems now that finally there is a future and there is going to be succession to the work and to the mission of Avraham and Sarah, but we see that even that is not given, and even that is not safe. And even after all the miracles, and God leads us on a covenantal pathway, it's still in danger. Only the soft voice of the angel at the Akedah, God commands Abraham, go sacrifice Yitzchak on the altar, which is the supreme test in the life of Abraham, the 10th test, the test that seems to be insurpassable, insurmountable, a test where Abraham knows that God is kind, that the basis and essence, the foundation of this world, of this universe, is chesed. Oilam chesed yabane. God built the world on kindness. And now that kind God who told Abraham that they promised Abraham that there will be succession and there will be a future and that a nation will come from him is now commanding Abraham to destroy that future, to kill that nation, to wipe out any succession. So it's all just doesn't make any sense. And that's why it was the ultimate test, because God's wanting Abraham to put his intellect aside and to fulfill his commandment. As I always say, Judaism doesn't believe in blind faith. Judaism doesn't believe in not having any mind and putting your mind to sleep and just following like a robot. That's not what the Jewish religion is. Jewish religion is all about intellectual knowledge, empirical evidence, and analyzing the facts in front of you. That's why we sit and learn Torah all day long, is because we want to sharpen the mind in order to make clear decisions that are responsible and that are based on empirical evidence. But once we reach a conclusion, which Abraham reached out of logic, out of straight thinking, out of empirical evidence, once we see that there's a God and there's a tremendous amount of hard evidence supporting the claim of the Jewish people, certainly supporting the claim that there must be a creator, that there must be a God, that's obvious and clear if one looks at the world in an objective way and sees the intricate nature of the perfect world that we live in. And once we understand there must be a creator, the Jewish story makes more sense than any other story. And there's a tremendous amount of evidence that corroborates the story of the Jewish people, whether it's archaeological evidence, whether it's the prophecies in the Torah, whether it's the fact that the entire world believes in Maamad Har Sinai, in the event that took place at Mount Sinai when God gave the Jewish people the Torah. There is a tremendous amount of evidence that backs up our claims. And So it is, Judaism is a very intellectual religion, but once you buy into the system and you see out of logic that it makes sense, so there are certain things that are going to be testing you, even if they don't fit into our understanding, into our ability to fathom and to make sense of. And that's part of the test of a human being once our intellect has led us responsibly in this right direction. As one of my great teachers said, he said the highway of knowledge takes us 80% of the way, and then we have to get out and walk the footpath of faith for the last 20%. And that was this great test of the Akedah of Hashem to Abraham, that he would now have to sacrifice his son, who was going to be the future of the Jewish people. And the only thing that ended that future, that's how close it was, that's how much it was really in danger of being lost, were the soft words of the voice of the Malach, of the angel at the Akedah, who said to Abraham, don't kill the child, don't harm the child. That's the difference between survival and extinction in the Jewish people. And that's really a great lesson for all of Jewish history, that Ma'aseh Avos Simen Labanim, that firstly, it looks like we have no future and we're born out of a situation where there seems to be no future. And even when we do have a future, it's always in danger. It's always on the brink. The state of Israel has fought 7 wars in its 70 years. And, you know, maybe we should think after 1900 years, we're back in our homeland. You know, give us a bit of a break. Give us, you know, 20 years of not threatening and of living in harmony and peace without any existential threats. But that's not the way it works. We learn from Abraham that life is about tests, that life's about challenges, that the 10 tests that Abraham went through, and we all, as his descendants, are constantly tested by God. And our lives and the situations we find ourselves in are tests that give us the potential and opportunity to develop and grow. The Ramban says that God tests us in order to convert our potential into actual, in order to make us greater people, in order to bring out that latent potential, and through those tests so we rise and become better and greater people. And, you know, that's life. Life is constant and life is never ending. And all the situations, circumstances we find ourselves in during the different phases of our lives are wrought with many tests, because those are wonderful opportunities to develop and grow, as we see in the life of Avraham Avinu, and as we see that it's just never ending, it's relentless. And if we believe that, you know, I'm going to work hard and then I'll retire and then it's all going to be beautiful beaches with magnificent sunsets and palm trees, if we think that's how it's going to be, well, we're very mistaken. Because throughout our lives, at any phase and at any stage, we're going to be tested. And that's what life is. And that's what we see very clearly from Avraham Avinu, that the pressure is always on. We have a Daf Yom Balacha program in our community, in our shul, and we learn every day a page of Mishnah Berurah. And we've just finished a very hard section on Choylim B'Shabbos, Siman Shin Chav Ches, of Hilchos Shabbos. And so, you know, the guys in my shiur could say to me, well, Rabbi, we've learned this section, it was very hard, let's just have a bit of a break. Let's just, you know, take time off for 2 weeks. But that's unfortunately not the way it works, that we got to, every day, we've got to learn and we've got to grow and we've got to face those challenges. And that's really what life is and what life's about. And so we see that very clearly in the life of Abraham. Towards the end of Abraham's life, he has one great test, one final test, and that's what this week's parsha is, Chaye Sarah. So please stay with us. We'll discuss that when we come back in a moment.
You're listening to Adventures in Jewish History with Rabbi Danny Sackstein.
Whiskey and Spirits Live, supported by Gauteng Tourism, is on at the Sandton Convention Center from the 31st of October to the 2nd of November, when almost 300 of the world's finest whiskies are brought under one roof. It's time for the world's largest whiskey festival. Whether you're a newcomer or an enthusiast, discover premium spirits that include whiskey, gin, rum, tequila, vodka, and more. Spirits Live from the 31st of October to the 2nd of November at Sandton Convention Center. Tickets available at ticketspro.co.za. So we're talking about the great tests that Abraham went through throughout his life. And one of those big tests was the death of his wife, of Sarah Imenu. And obviously that was a massive trauma for Abraham. Sarah was a very great woman in her own right. The Torah tells us that Sarah had a greater level of prophecy than Abraham did. Kuma shetoima Sarah tishma b'koila. The Torah says that God tells Abraham everything that Sarah says, you should listen to her. And from there we learn that she had a greater level of Ruach HaKodesh, of Nevuah, of understanding the spiritual worlds than Sarah did, than Abraham did. And Sarah dies. So Abraham's now left without his soulmate, without his best friends, without his life's partner. And he has to purchase a grave. He has to purchase a place for Sarah to be buried. The neighbors that were in the area to Abraham were the Hittites. And Abraham approaches them, and they say to him, as we see in the beginning of this week's parsha, they say, what an honor for us that Nasi Elokim Betochenu, that the Prince of God is in our midst, is amongst us. Come, and they welcome him warmly. They recognize that Abraham is a very holy man. But when it comes to the crunch of finding a place to bury Sarah, so Abraham has to pay a full price. Not only a full price, but they overcharge him. They're not willing to give Abraham anything. And that's another great lesson for us, the descendants of Abraham, of the another Maisa Avos Limbani. What happens to the ancestors is a sign of what's going to happen to the children of the future generation. That we look here, well, let's look at the situation. Abraham is the founder of monotheism in the world. He's called Av Hamon Goim, the father of all nations. As we mentioned earlier, he is able to reach 50% of the world's population in teaching them about a God, about a kind creator, about morals and values and our purpose in this world. Abraham has healing powers, and Chazal tell us that many people flocked in the area to Abraham if they were ill, and he blessed them and he was able to heal them. Abraham was a very wealthy person who carried out tremendous kindness, which was a rare sight in the brutal pagan world that he lived. If a person was going through hard times, a person had a wedding to pay off, a person had a mortgage payment and couldn't afford it, so their first port of call would be Avraham Avinu. They would go to Abraham, he would lend money, he had a free loan society. Our sages say that he lent out millions to help those around him. And everybody accepted that Abraham was irreplaceable, that he was a Baal Chesed, which was quite unbelievable. And when he died, the world wept as a result. But when it came to the crunch, when Abraham needed something, when he was in need of help, even though they acknowledged that he was Nasi Elokim B'Sochenu, that it's the Prince of God who's amongst us, but they still wouldn't move an inch for Abraham and overpaid him for the field, as the Pasuk says, Arba Meas Kesef Ovel L'Soiche, that 400 shekels, golden coins, were transferred for Abraham to buy the field in order to bury Sarah. And that was, our sages tell us, 40 years' wages of a laborer in those times. That's how much 400 shekels was. So Abraham didn't get anything in return. There was no leeway for him at all. And he had to overpay for what he wanted when he looked to others for their help. And that's a big lesson for us, for the Jewish people. If we look at the Jewish people, so we look at great Jews that have contributed to society and to civilization. It's through the Jews that the polio vaccine was invented, that the theory of relativity comes through a Jew, the invention of the atom bomb, the amount of Nobel Prize winners, the amount of great doctors with great medical advances, a contribution to industry and to economies around the world. So the Jewish people have played their part in contributing to civilization, and we really do punch way above our weight in every given field. But when the Jewish people are in need, when we need, please accept some of our refugees at the time of the Second World War, please support our homeland, the State of Israel. So unfortunately, usually there's nobody to help us, and we're left alone, as was the case with Avraham Avinu. And that's also part of the covenant. That's also part of the deal of how the covenant works. And we see it so clearly in the life of Avraham Avinu. It made no difference that a half of the German Nobel Prize winners before World War II were Jewish. It didn't make any difference. It didn't help us or stand to mitigate the hatred against us. So unfortunately, that's part of the covenant. Unfortunately, we have 11 people murdered in a center where Jews gather, and it is a reality of the covenant that Avraham entered into with God at the beginnings of the Jewish people. Avraham also realizes a very important point. He realizes that he has to narrow his scope. Although he spread far and wide, was able to reach half of the world's population at the time, but he realized that if he wants to influence the future destiny of his descendants, so he needs to narrow his scope. And Avraham has a child in Yitzhak. Yitzhak has Yaakov. Then, and Avraham invested a tremendous amount in Yaakov Avin. Chazal tell us that the first 15 years of Yaakov's life, he was raised by Avraham. And that's what really distinguished him from Esav. The question is, why was Yaakov, who was Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim, he was a pure person who sat in his tents, his the difference between the two was the input that Avraham had and the influence he had on Yaakov. And he invested all of the hopes and the future of the Jewish people into Yaakov, and he knew with Yaakov would be the continuation of the Jewish people. Success in Judaism requires focus to be a mile deep, even if it's only an inch wide. And that's unfortunately very often what happens is the Jews' observance is only an inch deep and a mile wide. And if that happens, unfortunately, it doesn't last. We saw that with Eastern European Jewry, where the masses had a very thin commitment to Judaism. And when the winds of change blew, and in the form of those leaving the security of Eastern Europe and arriving on the shores of the United States or South Africa, or the winds of communism, or the winds of enlightenment, or secularism blew in the Jewish world. So those that didn't have deep roots, they were blown away from Judaism. Only those that had very deep roots were able to withstand the winds of change and the vicissitudes of life. And that's a very important lesson that we learn from Avraham Avinu, that he concentrated on Yaakov, and he made sure that it was a mile deep, even if it was only an inch wide. And that's something that is a discussion that we have in the great organizations within the Jewish world about how best to influence our current situation. Should we educate those that are returning to Judaism in order to have a deep understanding of Judaism, in order to be a mile deep, and to be able to then set their roots firmly within spiritual living and influence others? Or is there such an emergency situation that we don't have that luxury, and it needs to be only an inch deep and a mile wide to try and reach out and affect our brothers and sisters around the world? That is a discussion that's still going on today within the Jewish world. But we do see from Avraham that at a certain time in his life, he did narrow his scope in order to ensure that that Yaakov had sufficiently deep roots to be able to carry the Jewish people into the future. We also learn from Avraham that the covenant is eternal. Our sages teach us that Avraham protects his children in the next world, that Avraham stands at the gates of Gehenna, at the gates of the place in the next world where a person is sent in order to be purified, in order to remove the stain on their neshama, on their soul, from the choices that they made in this lifetime, if they were the wrong choices. And it says that Avraham stands there at those gates and he removes his descendants. He defends them. He tries to mitigate their situation and bring them into Gan Eden. And he only does that to his descendants, which are those that have a bris milah. If a person has reversed their bris milah, Avraham won't defend them. And also, if his Jew's been intimate with a non-Jew, if they haven't done tshuva, so Avraham also won't defend such an individual. So that the bris, the covenant, is something that's eternal and will stay with us even when we go into the next world. As long as we haven't undermined that bris, that covenant, and haven't removed it from ourselves, we're still part of the covenant. Our sages teach us that there was a tree that Avraham planted in Beersheba, and it was from the wood of that tree that the Mishkan was built. the Mishkan, which is the sanctuary, they took the wood of the tree that Avraham planted. And the sages say also in the future, in Bayis Shlishi, when the Mashiach comes and we rebuild the temple, the third temple, Bimhera Bi'Ameinu, so there's also going to be wood from the trees that were planted by Avraham that will be used in the third Beis HaMikdash. So they're not only talking literally about the wood that will be used, but also figuratively, that his commitment, Avraham's commitment to the covenant, was the foundation of holiness of the Jewish people. And that commitment to the covenant is a constant thread, and that will take us right the way through to the ultimate, the end of the process and the redemption when Mashiach comes. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Adventures in Jewish History with Rabbi Danny Sackstein.
When Avraham Avinu died, he's buried in Machpelah, in that cave that he purchased for his wife Sarah, and he's buried next to his soulmate and his life partner, Sarah Imenu. And in his death, so the Machpelah became a holy place. It's a place that millions visit each year because of his tremendous and Sarah's tremendous influence on the world. It's ironic, the Gemara says, that Avraham paid for the Machpelah when there's a contention about who it belongs to, since Avraham paid for it and he has a title deed, so there will be no claim against it. There will be no contention about the Jewish people's right to that place, to Hebron, to Marat HaMachpelah, where Avraham and Sarah are buried. But ironically, it hasn't turned out that way, and that even that place is in dispute today. And that's why, actually this week, the Shabbos, thousands of people go to Hebron and they spend Parshas Chayei Sarah to show that we, the covenantal people, and that we're still part of the covenant, and that this is part of the of our inheritance from Avraham Avinu and from Sarah Imenu, and that it belongs to us, Hebron, and the land of Israel was promised to the Jewish people as part of the covenant with Avraham and Sarah. And so still today, in the 21st century, we still cling to the covenant of Hashem, and that covenant forged by Avraham and Sarah is ongoing in their descendants and in the Jewish people. And we all need to make an effort to be a part of that covenant, and with great pride and joy carry out those responsibilities of the covenant. And by doing so, we'll be fulfilling our life in this world. We'll live a life of tranquility and of fulfillment and of meaning and of purpose and of understanding and of richness and of spiritual greatness. And not only will we benefit greatly by attaching ourselves to the covenant and living up to its responsibilities in this world, but certainly there's no question in the next world for eternity we'll be repaid by Avraham Avinu, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the creator of the universe, and we will enjoy great benefits for eternity as a result of us clinging to this covenant of Avraham and Sarah. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.